on page 33. The Rebbe was telling us how it's possible for each and every one of us to be able to see Ha'at HaMelech, Baruch Atah Hashem Mekan HaMelech HaOlam, Ha'at HaMelech, to see in a very clear way and to feel in a very clear way the presence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu in every single thing that we see, in every single thing that we experience. Because the Jewish people are B'nai Nevi'im, and B'nai Nevi'im means that we have this prophetic koach to be able to sense what's taking place beneath the surface of things. But on page 33, so you see that the Rebbe is, we see here that the Rebbe is always aware of the fact that he was living at a time where it was no longer sufficient for somebody to look into a chassidish sefer that says that you have these kaiches and to believe that he really does. So he writes v'chein on the top of page 33, v'chein al yipol libcha bekirbcha leimer ish chayte v'namachani. Perhaps all of this that we've been learning is not going to apply. It doesn't apply to you. Why? Because you know that you're a person that has sinned, and you're not, and ish chayte, a sinner v'namach, and you're not of great character. You're a Ve'ech evsheli liros is ha'ata melech ha'olam. How is it possible for a person like me to be able to experience, to be able to see this ata, that you Hashem are king of the world, to feel and to experience this machshava tahari, this pure and clear thought of Hashem's presence wherever he looks. Afilu b'madrega namuchas shebenamuchas. So he says, Yadanu is matzavcha gam yadanu. So the Rebbe says, I know what you're thinking, I know what you're feeling, and I know your situation. Vim kol zeh, and despite all of this, betuchim anu b'Hashem. The Rebbe says, we trust in Hashem, u'b'kedushas Yisrael asher b'cha. And in the kedushas Yisrael, that's within you. We trust in Hashem, And the fact that sof kol sof, regardless of all that you might have done in your life and the mistakes that you've made, you're still a Jew. And as long as you're a Jew, you have this quality that's called Kedushas Yisrael. You have this holiness. You have this Kedusha. Shetira imrak atam in hanoshim shepirashnu perk techen achevet taim alef beis gimel dal vehei. We're not going back to that. He said if you're one of those people that fit in, that at least subscribe to those first five conditions that we learned at the very beginning of this sefer. But the Rebbe explained at the beginning, "Vim leitira b'riyazu tamid al kol ponim zmanim harbe yulachashet tistakel b'riyazu." That even a person like you, even if you're not able to see things this way, the way that we're learning all of the time, but certainly, many times you will be able to see things this way. Then you will be able to lift yourself up above taivis, above coarse physical desires, v'kir haguf, and the ugliness of physical life. Tizdakech v'tizkadesh, you'll become refined and holy. And even if sometimes you return, you fall back to the coarseness, to your earlier way, you will be able, if you're focusing on what we're talking about, you'll be able to rise up again, and you'll be able to come back to this madrega. Even before you're able to begin to see things the way that we've been talking about, Shatiris kol ha'olam lelakus shemus and neshamas, before you're able to see that the whole world is godliness and letters of the Aleph Beis, names of Hashem, and surrounded by neshamas, v'komakom havimamik b'daitucha b'chol yom. So the Rebbe says, for a person such as yourself, you feel that because of the averis that you've done and because of your and because of your commitment to physical life, that it's not possible for you to live the way that we're describing. So he says, so try, he says, to think deeply each day. Ani eini roya. Could be, I don't see this with my eyes. This is how we begin. He says, I don't see all of this, these neshamas, the letters of the Aleph Beis, Hashem's presence everywhere. I don't see this. But I believe that Hashem's glory fills the entire world. And that all is created from His from godliness. And you think to yourself that therefore I am also filled with godliness. I am also filled with Elokus. And even the grains of sand, of dirt, that I'm walking upon, Shemos Haim, the letters of the Aleph Beis, the Hashem's names. Kol ha'olam kolul b'kedushas elokusai bebitl gomer. The entire world is all part of this kedusha of Hashem's presence. And all is nullified before Hashem. V'rak ani b'ritzayni ha'prati ha'itzesi es atzmi ledover. Nimsa b'fnei atzmai harchek m'mini yisbar. And the Rebbe says, then think. Even though you don't see with your eyes, try to think the following. Try to think of this. That the entire world, every single thing around me is filled with shemus of Hashem, letters of Hashem's name. And everything is nullified before Hashem and is aware of Hashem's presence. And I alone, in this entire world, v'rak ani, even the ground that I'm stepping upon, is all names of Hashem, shemus of Hashem. And I by myself, because of my own individual and personal coarseness and needs, I have actively removed myself to make myself into a separate entity from all of this amazing presence of God. I have made myself into something which is harchik meni yisbarach, far from Hashem, removed from Hashem. Yes, nav and nod, that I'm wandering and lost. And I have taken myself, I have excluded myself from this amazing gathering, this amazing gathering of all of reality, of everything in the world that is Elokus, and I have actively, forcibly removed myself from this great machane, this gathering of all of creation. Yeah, what he's saying is that if you feel that you can't do this, you're not able to see. You're not able to see the shamas and the neshamas, and you feel that you're incapable of it. So then he's saying, begin with this type of a meditation. Believe, think that, try to imagine that everything in the world, even though you can't see it, that everything in the world is in fact Elokus, and think of yourself as being the only one that is outside of all of this. And he says, "Ukshetar b'lahasmit v'lekvoya machshava zu b'moychacha." If you continue and you establish this thought, you think of this a lot. Hari ata koyfes atzmecha l'machshava zu. Then you will force yourself eventually. You will force yourself to be included in all of that elokus and all of that godliness. And he says, "Vareze kamoish isa b'Rambam zal," like the famous Rambam in Hilchos Gerushin, "Kaifin oisai ad sheyomer reitzani." When the person doesn't want to give the get, even though he's supposed to give the get, so it's the famous Rambam. The Rambam, you know, the get a get has to be given by one's own free will. Nevertheless, the Rambam says that we force the person until he says, "I want to do this." So it seems to be a contradiction. How could you force a person? How could it be that you're coercing this person? You're forcing him, and you're telling him that he must say, "I want to do this." If he has clearly stated, "I don't want to do this," to the point that you have to force him. So the reason for that, the Rambam says, is because that's what he really wants. inside of himself, that's what he really, really wants. He doesn't want to rebel against Beis Din. He doesn't want to mistreat another Jew, his wife. That's not what he really wants. He really wants to do the right thing. And what Beis Din has to do, what the court is doing, is peeling away the outer layer of that false outer layer and forcing him to be himself, forcing him to be who he really wants to be. That's why he says, Shlachein mo'elos amirash hibikfiya. Otherwise, how does it work? In other words, there are certain things when you see what the Rebbe is saying here is, how could you say something and be so insincere? You don't see God's presence. You don't see these letters of the Aleph Beis. You don't have this type of machshava that the Rebbe's been talking about. But he's saying, so what you should do is you should spend some time each day speaking about this metzias, that there is this reality. Speak about it. There's a reality that even the ground that you're stepping on is all over the place. Yud kei vav kei, shin dalet yud, aleph lamed hey yud mem. Letters of the Aleph Beis. Elokus mamish, godliness mamish. And think about how you're excluded from all of this. Not that God has excluded you, but you have taken yourself out of all of this. So what's the point of saying this? What's the point of thinking this? Because the Rebbe says, because inside of you, you know it to be true. We have this thing. It's the same thing when it comes to davening, bechlal, let's say, saying certain tefillahs. So this thought that, look, if I'm not thinking about it, there's no sense, there's no point to any of this. But if one believes in his neshama, so that what the same way that the Rambam says that the person is forced to give a get, and he must say the magic words, Reitz ani, I want to give the get, even though he doesn't want to give the get. So how does that work? Because there's the internal real self and there's the external phony self. The internal real self wants to comply with Beis Din, wants to do the right thing, wants to serve Hashem. Therefore, if you say something, like it says in the Sfarim, Hamanti ki adaber. Hamanti ki adaber means that I will believe ki adaber if I will say it. It doesn't mean some sort of empty. It might begin that way. When you begin saying it, it means nothing. But if it's something which is true and it's something which comes from something which is connected to the neshama, if you say it and you is nafshi yotze bedabro, that my nefesh, my neshama is able to emerge gradually as I say this, then my pnimius, then my inner essence begins to emerge. So even though initially it will seem very odd to say this, but over time, the Rebbe says, if you continue, eventually, he says, kishakoyfim. I'm sorry. Because really the rotzen of a Jewish soul is to do what Hashem wants. It's just that external part of him is preventing, is holding him back. That's obstructing him from doing what he really wants. When the person, however, forces his chitzonius, he forces the chitzonius, then his soul is able to leave its prison, and to say, writes on the, I do want this. Therefore, it's not only that you don't have to wait till somebody from the Beis Din forces you to do the right thing. He says, the essence of being a Jew is to force yourself to do the right thing. Is you to force yourself to do the right thing. And if you think about this that we just spoke about, and you establish this firmly in your heart and your mind, that all of creation is filled with Shemos, with Hashem's names, it's not possible. If you think about this, not just for a second. See, we're not used to thinking about anything spiritual for more than a second or two. But if you really concentrate, upon this, then it's not possible that it's not possible that after some time that you will not come to this point where your nefesh, where your soul will be revealed with this clear way of seeing reality. Because the soul, your soul, really in itself, it does see things in this way. It's only the body that is in the way. It's only the body that's in the way. And if you subdue the body, if you force the body to comply, how do you do that? Because by verbalizing the words, by saying, it's usually not enough just to think, but by actually verbalizing. By verbalizing these words, you are now taking this abstract thought, and you're bringing it into physical reality, and you repeat it over and over again, until your body has no choice but to give in to the true reality, to the true belief that you have in your neshama, until your nefesh is able to emerge, v'roya, and you're able to see. V'imloy tamid, and if you're not able to always go be this way, al kol panim shos hours v'regoyim tovim, there will be good hours, good moments, yulacha. And yofesh ha'achas, as it says in Chazal, that 1 hour of tshuva and masim tovim of clarity, 1 hour of clarity in this world is greater than all of the world to come. Yeah.
Besides physical objects, but also physical events
in the background, 100%. To see the Ratzon of Hashem, to see the will of Hashem in all of this. Huh? The Shem Hashem, yeah, 100%.
We don't say the same thing about things that aren't true, that if you talk it into yourself, you'll believe it. I mean, if you say something enough.
No, is there such a thing as propaganda? The answer is, of course, there is. That if a person, even if a person repeats a sheker, repeats a lie often enough, so he can begin to believe it. There is such a thing. The Koch HaDibra is very, very powerful. But what he's saying is that since this is true, it could have a very, very powerful effect. In other words, a Jew could talk himself into something, but he doesn't really believe it, if it's not true. A person can talk himself into something. And a Jew could certainly talk himself into believing that there's no God, there's no Torah, there's nothing. You could talk yourself into that. But it won't have that same natural, powerful effect or appeal that it will have to a Jew who talks it into himself that there is a God. Because you can't compare a person who's being inconsistent with himself to a person who's being consistent with who he is. And basically, when it comes down to it, since inside the individual there is this awareness, and it's only the result, it's only the goof that is obstructing that clarity. Therefore, by repeating this, the person begins to feel it. He's not creating that feeling. When it comes to propaganda, the point of propaganda is, how do I generate within myself? How do I generate within another person, or create within a person a certain awareness, a false right awareness? But here it's not that. Here it's a question of releasing that which is there all the time, and allowing it to emerge into our lives. Not creating or generating something, but releasing and permitting something to have an effect over us. And all of davening is like that. If we would just think about it, if we would think about davening, if we would think about the words and what they mean, and we would say it, it would have a tremendous impact upon us. But we haven't even, most of the time, we haven't even gotten to that first stage of even thinking of what the words mean. So, you know, we say, I don't understand, I'm davening for years, it doesn't do anything for me. And it hasn't changed me. How come I davening, I'm getting up every morning, I go to Mincha Maariv, and I still am the same person? But that's not true for the individual who works on his davening, who thinks about what the davening means, and spends time concentrating and meditating and so on. Certainly that person, by saying the words, that person is certainly transformed.
When the Rebbe was writing this, was this a high Madrega as well, or this was the beginning Madrega for Rebbe? Like for us, I'm saying for myself now, this would be a high Madrega just to be able to concentrate on this constantly.
Right.
Then was this the first step?
He says this is a beginning. This is the beginning. But to be able to hold on to that thought, to be able to focus and to think about this, for a few minutes a day, to have this thought, is the beginning of one's avodah. V'afil b'shaos she'enan me'iros. And even at times of the day, he says she'enan me'iros, where she'enan me'iros means where you don't have that kind of illumination. You don't have the times when you don't feel that you could do this. V'ein b'yicholas nafshach l'sgaber l'sdakel b'ri'izu. And you just don't have the spiritual strength to see things this way. You will find that even if you're not successful in bringing this out inside of you, by trying to concentrate on this, it'll have a tremendous positive effect. That by looking at the world, by having this thought that everything that surrounds you is standing in complete awe and is nullified before Hashem's presence. Again, Shemos, letters of the Aleph Beis of Hashem's name, and Neshamas, and you're surrounded by Neshamas, by souls. Ve'rak ani birya mechutzefes, and I'm just a chutzpedik being. Perashti is atzmi, I have separated myself. Yitzasim min ha-machne shechina, and I have left this place, this machne shechina. You begin to worry about yourself. Like, why aren't you invited to this party? What happened? The whole world is when you read Psukah de Zimra. If you think about this, why are you saying Psukah de Zimra? Psukah de Zimra is the most unbelievable description of how the entire world is filled with Shemus and Neshamas, how all of creation is running to do Hashem's will, how every single cloud and flower and every single grain of dirt is bottled to the Ratzon of Hashem. And you think, and how is it that, look at me, I'm the only one that doesn't feel this. I'm the only... Don't compare it to a friend, because the guy next to you is also not doing too well. But to the world, to Malachim, to the Tzaddikim, and see yourself as having excluded yourself from all of this, from this whole amazing march of all of creation.
You're very depressed with this.
So wait. Lama be'emes ha'toymet, depression is not permitted, right? So let's see what happens here. This is Lama be'emes ha'toymet chutz l'rishus, rishus l'shal Hashem Yisbarach. You're the only one. And you see yourself, that you're like outside, and you start trying to bang on the door to be allowed in. K'fi she'tasmi l'shkov machshav azu. U'be'emuna shleima shein oid zulaso. And strengthen your emuna that there's nothing besides Hashem. Va'akol elokus. And everything is Hashem. Chutz m'mcha, except for you. You're the only one that's outside. You'll begin to worry so much. Ad shaharbe pa'amim, until it will come sometimes. Timas b'chol oifin chayech hazeh. You'll become disgusted. You'll begin to loathe your life. That you can't stand yourself. And this, you'll be disgusted with this, that the feeling that you've been covered by a layer of confusion, of boredom, that your life is filled with mistakes. Hadaiga tispashet belibcha, this worry will begin to spread throughout your heart, bevarech, and your limbs, b'machshavtecha, v'af ma'asecha, and your thoughts and your actions, are shviras halev. And it's true, not to be depressed, but you'll become heartbroken. And your ikoscha, this will cause you anguish. Anshe tekanei tamid b'machin elokim, zeta, you're jealous of all who are part. You become filled with jealousy, of envy, for all those who are part of that camp, for all those who belong, for all those who are in the party. That the way the river is flowing, that everything in the world, all of creation, is moving to do the Ratzon of Hashem. And I alone have left all of this and am distant. And if you're able to have this thought at the moment that you're having a thought that's not appropriate, and something some lower type of a thought is infiltrating into your mind, try to think about this for a second. Shezui shuv hashlocha migeder akedusha alfei prasos. How you're taking yourself and you're throwing yourself thousands and thousands of miles away from kedusha. Anocha tisparitz mimcha. A krechs will come out from you. And you'll say, Oy, Rabbi Shalom, Lama Farat Nishain, Farvarfin, Rabbi Shalom, please Hashem, I don't want to be thrown far away from you. I don't want to be far away from you. In Shaol Tachtis, in a filthy, disgusting hole, a pit, I don't want to be this way. For Ak Oz Tovin, Kamat Saidkim Divir Chazal, Sharmu Noach Leil Adam Shalay Nivir Mishanivra, you'll begin to feel, I know what Chazal meant when they said that it would be preferable, it'd be easier for men not to have been created than to be created, because at this point you feel disgusted with yourself. You're having some kind of a base, silly thought of something of an avera, and if you're able at that time to take hold of your mind and to think this thought about how you are so covered with this layer of confusion, how your whole life is such an unbelievable mistake, how all of reality is running to Hashem, and you're the only one that's shut yourself out from that, and to try to picture this and to think about this. So he says that you'll feel this in a very strong way, that Noach Leil Adam Shalay Nivra Mishanivra, that what's the purpose of my life? The way that I'm living now, I can't go on living. I can't live this way. I can't continue this way, being far from Hashem, being far from all of this. Kimash Nishar Lo Mizeh Shenivra. What do I have that I've created? So what did I gain by what did I gain by being created by Hashem? For Ba'ilam Hazeh Ka'irach Night Lolun Kitzel Ivra, that I passed through this world like a passing shadow. Rakash Loch Mimach Nishchina. All I have here is that I'm shut out. That I've removed myself from the Machne Shechina, from this great presence of Hashem in all of the world. And you worry, perhaps, how do I know that I'll be able to enter again? How do I know that I'll be able to come back to Hashem? It would have been better for a person like me not to have been created. If Hashem would have at least allowed me to remain in the higher world, and my neshama would have been devoted to him. Mamish shuka tachzenu noach leishalay nivra. Uchshetavo lekriyashma. Now, when it comes to kriyashma, utitzayi b'machshavtecha she'ilu bosili dey nisayin. Then he says, after you have this thought, now this is an upsetting thought, right? This is an upsetting thought. You mamish exclude. And you see yourself as being, as someone who has no point and purpose in his life, because you've missed out on the whole reason for your existence. He says, then when you say Shema, imagine in your mind, this is the kavana that's brought from the Rebbe Elimelech. It's a very powerful thought. She'ilu bosili dei nisayon, that even a person like you, who's outside, who's not allowed into that, who's taken himself out from that kedusha, that if you would come to a point, you would be tested. And you would have to give up your soul. You'd have to die for your Yiddishkeit. This is the most powerful thing. To think that you certainly would also, even though you're so distant from Hashem, nevertheless, even a person like you, you would give up your life to be a Jew. You will awaken within you. You will awaken within you that tshuka, that desire, that longing, and this feeling that was always hidden in your heart. You would be able to awaken within you this thought, halavai, Rabbi Shalom, not that I don't want to live, we want to live, but halavai, I would be potter from all of this stuff, you know, from everything, from work, and from you know, the gas station and the grocery, and from all the narishkeit and all the silliness that we're surrounded with. If I could only be potter, exempt, if I could get away from all of this, and I'd be able to mishapich la'eva mevarn demalka kivyachol, to be transformed kivyachol, to feel that I'm a limb of God Himself, to come back to that madrega of my neshama. You could actually feel this. You could actually imagine yourself being tested in this way, being given a choice to either die, al kiddush Hashem, to be killed, or to renounce your emunah, to renounce your faith, to renounce your Yiddishkeit. Ubesimcha to oisek fitza achas derech hamoiked ela ein seif. And with great joy, you're able to see yourself with one leap, jumping into the fire of infinity, of Hashem's infinite, of Ein Sof, of that which is infinite. Ad shelefamim guvcha nirta, itzich hashokel, to the point that you physically, if you have this thought, you could almost feel it. You could almost feel yourself jumping into the fire. Min ha'ashlocha machshav zu, from this emotional or spiritual throwing of the self into the fire, you could even physically feel sometimes, you could feel it, that something is happening. So the Rebbe says, so what he's saying here is this person, he's talking to a person who feels, I'm not shaykh to all that we've been learning. I'm not shaykh to this. I don't see myself surrounded by godliness, and I don't feel this kind of inspiration that the Rebbe's talking about. So what's the tachlis? So the Rebbe says that the tachlis is that even a person like you, you can come to this kedusha, but you have to come through the back door. Meaning, your way of coming to this kedusha is by breaking your heart. This is not necessarily a healthy thing to do on a regular basis. But like the Tanya says, the Tanya brings from the Zohar, that what happens when you have a person who's not able to feel Elokus? That means that the heart has become cold and paralyzed, and the only thing that you could do is that you have to shock it. You have to shock the system. Most of us go like this day after day, year after year, without the system being shocked, unless, God forbid, a tragedy happens. When a tragedy happens, then the system gets shocked. But we don't bring it upon ourselves. Or if something amazing happens, something fantastic happens, a gewaltige simcha that you never dreamt of. So then you get like a boom. You get, what's that machine that they use for the heart to give it a, huh? Yeah, it's a funny word. What is it again? Defibrillator. Okay, so to give it a jump start, right? I'm more familiar like with the car. I know better with the car, like, you know, the shock, the jumping cable. Yeah, that's more my way of looking at things. So you give it a, you give yourself it gives a jump. Give it a jump. So mostly we go like this, our hearts are dull, and we go like this all the time, and nothing changes. Unless something from the outside gives it a jump start. Somebody comes along, some event or some person comes along and gives it this jump start. And then you start to think, Gewalt, what's with me? And, you know, and you start to want to change. Sometimes that could be the result of having done the most horrible affair that you never thought you would do. And you do this terrible thing, and you look at yourself, and that is and that is the jump start. but the Rebbe is saying you don't have to wait until something happens. You can do this to yourself. You can shock your own system, and even though it's not something which any shock for a long period of time certainly could be very dangerous. This is not something that one should just like the one should do all the time. Just like the thought that the Rebbe was discussing, the meditation that he was discussing earlier about seeing yourself being lowered into the grave. Right? You remember that very morbid and vivid description of how you could bring yourself back to reality by imagining yourself being lowered into the grave and your family is screaming and crying and then everybody leaving the cemetery and you're left there by yourself with the worms. If you listen, that's not something you could think about on a regular basis, because God forbid you lose your mind. But what he's talking about is shocking the system to bring yourself back into reality, and therefore when one begins initially with this upsetting thought of how you've excluded yourself and you've made yourself such a low life and a manuvel that all of creation is praising Hashem, is turning to Hashem, and you've excluded yourself because of your thoughts, your words, and your actions, and you begin to loathe yourself and feel this self-loathing and you make this cheshbon nefesh. But then he says, instead of allowing yourself to submerge and sink deeper into that, you begin to think, when you say Kriyashma that morning or that night, or even to go on the side and say it. You begin to think, even a lowlife like me, even a manuva like me, a meshukitz, a piece of dirt like me, I'm sof kol sof, I'm a yid, I'm a Jew, and the kedusha of all that surrounds me is within me. I just, because of my averus, because of my self-imposed exile, I don't feel any of this. And if you have a thought that there's a huge fire that's been lit, and that there's some Gestapo guy, there's a Yemach Shemoinika standing there, or if you think of yourself being a Jew that lived at the time of the Inquisition, whatever it is, and you're standing on the edge of this huge pit, something you've seen in one of the documentaries, or you've seen a picture in a book, and you're being told to say that you'll be able to live, that you'll be allowed to live if you just renounce your Yiddishkeit and say, I don't want to ever be a Jew, I'm not a Jew, I will not be a Jew, and so on. And that person is standing there and he's about to push you into the fire. And you imagine yourself saying, I am a Jew, and I'm not giving up that, I'm not giving it up, and being thrown into the fire, or jumping into the fire, Kiddush Hashem. So this can have a tremendous impact upon you, and can bring you, can awaken within you all of those latent koiches of Kedusha. And he writes, Naloshim Ramim Onumus Atzmeinu Loimish Negi Teikif Lamadregis Rabbi Akiva. We're not fooling ourselves to say that we could come to this so easily, to this level of Rabbi Akiva Shoma, who said, when he was being burned and his students couldn't understand how he was saying Kriya Shema, right, when he was being killed, Kol Yomai Hayisi Mitztar B'Pozik Zeh B'Chol Nafshecha. So his students asked him, Rabbi, even now? And he said, what do you mean, even now? My whole life, I'm waiting for the opportunity to fulfill this mitzvah of giving my life up for Hashem. And Amarti, huh?
Heaven,
100%. The Tanya talks about that in Perek Yuches and Yutes. This is something that has been proven, and that has been proven that every Jew can come to this Madrega. What he's saying, however, is that the Madrega of Rabbi Akiva is to live with this thought of what all of his life he was hoping for the opportunity. None of us are waiting for the opportunity. We like to believe that we would pass the test. But it's not like we're looking for somebody to walk us over to the fire. We'd be very upset if we'd be very worried, and we'd be distraught at being brought to such a place. Right. Right. That's Rabbi Akiva called Yom Ha'Yisi Mitzdayer B'Pasuk Zeh. In Chol Nafshecha, the Beis Yosef was always crying that. He said that he was always hoping and expecting that he would have an opportunity to do Al Kiddush Hashem. And it didn't come his way. It didn't happen. He was hoping for it. That's a high madriga. When will I have the opportunity to be mekayim this b'chol nafshecha, to give up my life? Rabbi Akiva poshut choshek l'sana b'yisurim. Rabbi Akiva wanted very much to be tortured. And who would stire al shayin sarif and vesarik in his besara laman shmoyz barachin. He had tsar, it upset him all of his life that his body wasn't being burned and his flesh wasn't being combed with those rakes for the sake of Hashem. V'anu hagam shlohi ganu oed lezeh. We haven't reached this level. We're not hoping for such a thing to happen to us. He says, we certainly do want to become better Jews, and we recognize the fact that we have become detached, and we have placed ourselves in this world of dimyonis, of imagination, far from Hashem. It means to be fablonged. It means to be cut off and lost. Kevin shekol ish Yisrael mechuyev lahalas machshavto shehu Yehudi kechol beis Yisrael. Every Jew is chayev to think about this, that he's a Jew, a Yehudi a kotel, like it says in Chazal. I'm a Jew, and if you don't allow me to be a Jew, then you can kill me. I'm a Jew, and if you don't let me live a Jewish life, then my life is worthless. Then you might as well kill me. A Yehudi or Ketarl. In other words, either I'm a Jew, either you allow me to be a Jew, or you can kill me. Right? There's no, because there's no point to my living without being a Jew. That's why the moments of Mesirus Nefesh that we have in life are the most memorable moments. Even though it's not a Mesirus Nefesh where we have to jump into a fire. But whenever you have to give up something for your Yiddishkeit, that makes your Yiddishkeit stronger. And you would think it would make me more upset and it would make me feel angry with God that I have to give up certain things. It's not true. The problem with our Yiddishkeit, I mean, not that I don't want to, Chas v'Shalom shouldn't be to say Kitrugim, but the problem with our Yiddishkeit is that it comes very easily. It doesn't require much Mesirus Nefesh. We don't have to make that choice all the time between what? We don't have to have this thought that a life without Yiddishkeit, you know, is meaningless, because we're not confronted with that on a regular basis. Because Yiddishkeit has become, in our times, has become something which is very much a part of our schedule and is very convenient for us to live religious lives, Orthodox lives. It doesn't require such tremendous Mesirus Nefesh. If you or I were living someplace, you know, in South Dakota, and we lived in a way where to have a piece of food that's kosher, to be able to find a minyan, to go to a mikveh, it would be with Mesirus Nefesh. One of two things could happen. Either we'd, God forbid, leave everything because we couldn't take it anymore, but what's much more likely is that with the Mesirus Nefesh, our Yiddishkeit would be completely transformed. It would become much more important to us. I remember when I was in, a few years ago, I was in Houston for Shabbos, and I always think of this. It's a very beautiful community over there. I was very inspired by the Shabbos that I spent with that chevra there. And there was this fellow that he was talking on Shabbos afternoon. We were schmoozing a little bit, and I asked him, you know, this guy clearly, this was not he was not from Texas. I could tell by his accent, you know, it's either Flatbush Borough Park or somewhere nearby. So I asked him, you know, he was telling me, yeah, that he's from Flatbush, and because of work, so he had to move to Texas. And he said to me that, so I was asking him, so how's it going with your learning and your davening over here? How is it? So he said, you have no idea how much better it is over here. It's unbelievable. How much better it is my Yiddishkeit over here. So I said, how's that? So he said that when he lived back in the old days, when he lived in Brooklyn, he had like 3 shtiblach on his block. He had 3 shtiblach. He didn't know most of the people who even lived on his block. And he said if he didn't go to shul, so they figured that maybe the guy would think that I'm in the other shtiebel today. Or if I came late, so it didn't make a difference. I didn't make a difference to anybody or anything. And I felt useless. When I came here, I realized that if I don't come to minyan, they're not going to have a minyan. When I came here, I realized that if I don't learn, then he said to me like this, then Hashem's not getting any nachas from this little place in the world. When I was in Flatbush, he said, it felt like, you know, if I'm not doing it, there are a lot of other people doing it. So it's okay. It's getting done. You know, it's a din in the chefs and not the gavra. Like, it's happening. So it's not me. So what? You know, one day I'll be better. But over here, he says, I just don't have that choice. And even though in the beginning it was torture, because I had to get every day, you know, I had to get 6:30 to the minyan, and they were counting on me. And every single day when we left, the rabbi would go over to me and say, you know, we need you tomorrow. Make sure you'll be here. Right? He said, in the beginning, he says, it annoyed me. Because, you know, I'm not a Baal Bechira anymore. So, of course, you're a Baal Bechira. He says, you know, we were talking about, of course, he's a Baal Bechira. His choice is to ignore the rabbi. He has that Bechira. But that's the point. We don't really have that Bechira. We don't really, because inside of us, we don't want to be separate from God. We can't stand being separate from Hashem. And why did he feel that? Why is it that when he was in Flatbush, he felt that he could do that? Because over there, it wasn't with Mesirus Nefesh. And when it's not with Mesirus Nefesh, and this is something that our children don't feel, they don't have the Mesirus Nefesh. There's always something special with the frum kids from out of town, and it's hard to put your finger on it. You know, it's hard to identify what was that. You know, all right, it's not Mesirus Nefesh, like this type of Mesirus Nefesh that the Rebbe's talking about. But when Yiddishkeit doesn't come easy, when it's an uphill struggle and you're different, when you have to, you know, nowadays, the fact that someone wears a yarmulke doesn't necessarily mean that he acts differently. But if you're wearing a yarmulke in Houston, you know that you better act different. Because in that place, when they look at you, you know that they see that you're like Moshe Rabbeinu, Avraham Avinu. And you better act the part. And you, even though you might not feel it right now, that you might not feel your Yiddishkeit is so important, but this fellow was telling me that he felt important. He says, over here I feel like whether I go to the shir it might mean something. When I was back, you know, in Brooklyn, I felt like, okay, not nachashir. So you know, whatever, I'll listen to tapes or something later on. But I don't feel that my presence was as important and that it was as urgent for me to live this way. So in the absence of Mesiras Nefesh, you see these people, these Jews, there are people that for them, like I look at some of my father's uncles and it was never, for my father, it was never me up, you know, to go to shul with him. And I would beg him to let me, you know, why can't I go to the 7:30 minyan? I don't even have school today. Can I go to a later minyan? My father doesn't understand. It didn't chap at all. This is hard for you? This is your mesiras nefesh to get out of bed? It's like, what kind of a pitiful creature are you? This is your avoida, you know, to wake up early is an avoida for you? Because people that have to go through fires, people have to go through ice and through fire to be Jews, so you tell them, you know, I can't get up. Or I never in my life, I'm sure, you know, Jeff could relate because our fathers come from the same stock. I'm sure you could relate to this. Can you ever imagine my father standing in the shul, and if there's a chazan that's kvetching, let's say, next to 10 minutes, my father come home like upset about that. Could you believe it? We were stuck in shul for 10 minutes extra. No, it's not even shayach. Because I'm a Yid, and a Yid sometimes gets stuck, you know, you stay in shul a little bit extra. It wasn't like a... But we're so spoiled. And even our Yiddishkeit has to be so perfect. I don't mean perfect in terms of Vaidus Hashem, you know, I don't mean that. But perfect that it should be just right. Everything should be just right. Everything should go the way that I want, right? And everything is made just right. I shouldn't have to, you know, getting next to close to Hanukkah, every year I get upset about the pop open and the thing. I don't have to prepare any wicks for the oil. There doesn't have to be any, I don't need any hachanis for a mitzvah. Everything that even, that this, you know, in Pesach, and whatever became of Pesach, I already see the newspapers, it's already all, you know, where to go for Pesach and all of this. Which again, I understand some people, you know, they have to go. But I'm saying, this whole, it's all of it is to take away the Mesiras Nefesh. That there shouldn't be Mesiras Nefesh. Right, and when you don't have Mesiras Nefesh, your Yiddishkeit loses its tam. And that's what's happening to the kids. That's what's happening to the children and to us. It's not with Mesiras Nefesh anymore. So do we say, Halavai, I should be tested, it should be difficult, so maybe we should all go live taka someplace like that where this fellow lives, you know. Houston's already a nice community. It's not the wilderness. There you have shuls, a few, you have a couple minyanim and so on. But maybe I should place myself. so we're not in the madrega where we want to bring ourselves into a place of mysterious nerves. But when it happens, and if you have the thought, it changes you. It does change you. That's why any time in life that you or I had to do something with mysterious nerves, we remember it and gives us chizik. When we think back on those times when our Yiddishkeit required mysterious nerves. And I've mentioned this in shul, that I tell this all the time to my students who are living in a home where they can't keep Shabbos properly because the parents are watching the television. I have kids that they lock themselves. There's a kid that, there's this one kid, he stays in the room, he doesn't even move around anywhere because they have these sensors. He didn't know to ask a shayla, you know, they have the alarm thing. So he didn't want to go anywhere because it turns on lights, you know, by the alarm or something. So the guy, so he sat in one place. Like, he was doing this for a long time. He was afraid to go from one place to the other. And he was just sitting in his room. I mean, with Mesiras Nefesh. All right, it was crazy. He didn't know. But, you know, there's how to deal with it. But living that way, I have kids that they tell me that they can't stay in the house I'm telling you this. I've heard this hundreds of times from my students that they can't sit in house Shabbos because why? The telephone and the television. Then the mother yells, "How can? What's the matter? You crazy? Why don't you go shopping with me, or why don't you watch the television?" So there are kids. I have students that spend the entire Shabbos. They either spend if they have a religious friend, but I've had kids that they tell their parents they're going to a friend, and they don't even have a friend that's available, and they sit on a bench for 5-6 hours, or they walk around the neighborhood, doing nothing. Because they just don't want to be home, because they can't sit at home. Or they'll go sit in an empty shul. In an empty shul, they get permission to have kids. They get permission, they got a key, and they went and they sit and sat in the shul, and they try to learn a little bit, and then they fall asleep over the chumash by themselves, year after year, living Yiddishkeit in such a way. without zmiras at the table, without a geshmak, without anything. In total loneliness. You know, I could write books. And these kids also see themselves as being the furthest from Hashem. And I always tell them, you know, when you'll be older, and you can have a beautiful family, and you'll be keeping Shabbos, and you're going to look back on these Shabbos as the most chashev in your entire life. The ones that you were walking, have a kid. The kid came out of the conversation. The kid spent once, it was in the summer, because the friends were away, they were on vacation, there was no one around. He said he was walking for 7 hours. He had nowhere to go. He says he couldn't stay in his head. It was like he came back from school. He had nothing to do. And he says what happened is that his brother, an older brother, brought in, was making a party in the house, like some disgusting party. And they said, you know, he had nowhere to go. He just was walking around. He had nowhere to go. He says to me, this is the Shabbos I have. What kind of Shabbos is this? This is my Shabbos. So I said, this is the most unbelievable Shabbos. You don't know how this Shabbos is going to be mechazik you until you're 120. But our kids don't have Shabbos like that, because if our kids don't have groups. If a kid doesn't have a group, then already we have to move to a different neighborhood. We have to move to a different neighborhood. If my kid doesn't have a group, or if my kid has a group and he didn't get a good prize in groups, then this is Mesiris Nefesh. What kind of a Yiddishkeit is this? What kind of a Yiddishkeit? This whole attitude, right? And, you know, without going into too many pratim, you know, the babies being brought to shul and the shul, that all of this has become a convenience. Shul is a daycare center. and there was a mesivas nefesh, you know, and again, I'm not saying this is not a simple matter, and people would get upset, and I'm careful, because whenever I even alluded to this barabim, you know, we lost some members in the shul. But what about the mesivas nefesh? You have sometimes these wonderful Jewish women, and they're tired, they work hard. I understand. But they'll pack off the little ones who are not able to sit in the shul. They'll pack off little. I'm not talking about a kid that could sit with his father or to go to a group or something and they'll take care of it. But a little pitzula to send with the father. The father has to sit there the whole time, handling, trying with a candy, holding a baby, and trying to say Ashrei, and the kid's screaming, and the has to leave shul, come back to the shul, so that the mother should be able to rest Shabbos morning. It's not for the chinuch of the child. It's not for the chinuch of the husband. So for who is it that she should be able to rest Shabbos morning? Don't get me wrong. You know, I wish that all Jewish women are b'nais melech. They're all princesses, and halavai, they should have the most relaxing and wonderful Shabbos. But if you would have told this to our grandmothers and great-grandmothers, that what? That instead of a husband being able to daven, that he has to be able to sit with a bottle and to take care of a baby because mommy wants to sleep? Never in our history was there such a hasaga. Ever. There was never such a hasaga. See, even that mesiris nefesh of a Jewish mother, That for my husband to go to a shir, for my husband to go daven, to be in a minyan, is the most chosh of a thing in the world. And she's prepared to give up her oilam haza. Because I'm not saying it's easy, and I'm not blaming anybody. But to give up my oilam haza so that my husband should be able to learn. If you say this now, if you say this in a shul, and it's not like a, it's not B'nai Brak or something, if you say this in shul, you know that they'd run me out of town. I'd be run out of town for saying it. For my husband to learn, who is he? He should learn. Therefore what? He can't help out the whole week. And it's a legitimate title. The whole week I'm working and helping them, and I take care of the children. It's right. It's true. And therefore it would be a time at night and different times, of course, to help out. I'm not saying one shouldn't help out. But there was a mesiris nefesh that a Jewish woman had, that the most important thing to me is that my son is learning, that my husband is learning, or he's davening. And to believe that that that's something which is important for the entire family. But nowadays you have very often that the women b'chlal don't want that. That's not mesivus nefesh. Yeah, there's a schedule when it comes to going to exercise, mesivus nefesh. To spend an hour walking someplace with my friends on the boardwalk, mesivus nefesh. And all of these things, mesivus nefesh. But if you tell them that my husband should go to a shir, what? And leave me like this? Mehechetesa, why should I be left this way? It's without mesivus nefesh. So what's that Yiddishkeit of our grandmothers, of our great grandmothers they had, that was with mesivus nefesh? It's something which is it's disappearing, and the children are being brought up in such a way where they feel bishvili nivra ha'olam, that the world was created for my sake, and if my Yiddishkeit is going to be inconvenient to me, for me, then I have to try a different type of Yiddishkeit, because this Yiddishkeit is inconvenient for me, right? It's inconvenient. Like, you know, you'll have when we grew up in yeshiva, I remember the Rebbe used to beg us to wear tzitzis, right? Yes. He has tzitzis. So the old guy says, you know, come on, Rebbe, it itches. So you tell that to some old European Jew, you know, it itches. Huh? Yeah, it's uncomfortable. Its itches are uncomfortable. This is mesivus nefesh. That twice a day you feel something tickling you. It's mesivus nefesh. It's, come on, Rebbe, it's heavy. It's hard for me. This is mesivus nefesh. Those Jews that had to go through difficulties to be Jews, they look at us like in diapers. We're like babies in diapers. The way that we live our Yiddishkeit is like little babies in diapers. This whole thing that it has to be good for me, it has to be convenient for me. this whole hasaga is destroying the Yiddishkeit in our children. They could blame it on a million different things. They blame it like this and point fingers at the teachers, point fingers at the principals, and but without mesivus nefesh, there's no Yiddishkeit. Why? Because you could go your whole life putting on film and you never ever meet up with your neshama. Because the Rebbe's saying is the way to bring out who you are is by forcing your neshama to come to terms with who you are. Right? Forcing your neshama to come to terms with the fact that you're a Jew and that you're prepared to give up everything to be a Jew. But if you're not being asked throughout your entire life to give up anything for your Yiddishkeit, neither rabbi. If I have to watch the baby, then this type of Yiddishkeit is not good. Or if I have to, if on any level, in any way, I have to give up something to be from, so then it's not good. So that's what he's saying. We're not in this madrega, let's finish this paragraph. We're not in this madrega. We're not waiting to be thrown into a fire. We're not hoping to be killed on Kiddush Hashem, to be tested in such a way.
Conversely,
it
would be okay for a man to have Mesirus Nefesh versus early Mesirus Nefesh, right? Go to a later meeting.
That's fine.
So we're not just saying that it should be
Mesirus
Nefesh on the woman's part.
No, I'm not saying that. I'm talking 99% of the time. I'm talking about the men's Mesirus Nefesh. And certainly, if you could go to a person can have Mesirus Nefesh to be able to daven a good davening and to be able to. And to be able to help out the wife and make it easier for her, 100%. But that's not what people want. They want what? I should be able to go 9 o'clock. Listen, you want to go, yeah, if there's a baby and you need to give your wife a break. So when I lived in Queens and when the babies were very close in age, so I used to daven, so I went to daven at 7 o'clock. And I would try to come home and help out at 9 o'clock and give my wife a break, and if she wanted to go a little bit to daven to be a mensch, so she would go. And that, you know, that if you want to do that, that's beautiful. There's nothing. That's great. That's mesivus nefesh, not only for Hashem, it's mesivus nefesh for someone that you love. That's fantastic. But the problem is, no, I want to be able to go to shul not 8:30, not a quarter to nine either. I want to be able to come at 9:15, 9:20, and to come walking with my little chavri here, so the mommy can have a break. And that the daddy doesn't have to be Moshe Nefesh to go to Hashgah Minyan also, right? To take care of the children. You want your wife to sleep long, you daven at 7 o'clock. Then you get up at 6:30. And a chanami, 100%. Hamaskim. I was only pointing out that the fact that I was only talking about this nakuda in women, that where it was always seen as a source, as a privilege, to have a husband that's sitting and learning, but to have a husband that davens betzibur. And that's something which that she would be terribly disappointed in a husband that's not doing that. So now the disappointment is if I get myself a husband that doesn't wash dishes. The fact that he doesn't daven marv in shul, mincha marv, okay, I could deal with that. But look at my mazel. My mazel is I got a husband that davens in shul, but he doesn't wash dishes. I got stuck. Because listen, we know it's Xavier, you're not going to get someone that does all of that stuff. That's for sure. But if it's a choice, if it's a question of what my choice is, my wife's grandmother, Alea Shalom, she was from a town next to Vilna. She was in America. She was in America for like 75 years. She still didn't speak English. I mean, she thought it was English, but it wasn't. And she wasn't a person that was learned. They didn't have any Beis Yaakovs in schools. You know, she didn't learn. She used to, you know, look at Sanerenet, they say Tillim, this and that. She didn't really learn. But but when she would come for a visit, and she would see me learning, or she would see a safe on the table. To her, this was like the most beautiful thing in the world. She was, and she would start to tell us how she remembers she saw Reb Chaim Ezer, and she saw the Chofetz Chaim, and she started. This was the most precious thing in the world to her. And she doesn't know how to read, Kemat. She doesn't know how to read. But she saw this as being the most important thing, Yiddishkeit. And if the men would sit around and they would start schmoozing, so even though she was also part of this schmooze, she would say, what a batlin you are. What's the matter with you? You sit and talk to women all day. What's the matter with you? Why don't you learn? She says, my father, I never saw him that he wasn't with a sefer. It's a different way of looking at things, but it was a Yiddishkeit that came with Mesiris Nefesh. It didn't come easily, and this, I'll tell you the truth, even though I don't like all of us, we don't want to be put into a test where we have to, God forbid, dial Kiddush Hashem, but different levels of Mesiris Nefesh, I think we could think about them, we could be jealous of in a certain way Mesiris Nefesh. So he says, "V'anu hagam shle." Just finished. "V'anu hagam shle yiganu od lezer." Aval akol panim shteikim lezer. Yeah, but I'm doing. But if no mechmucha, because the kevin shakol ish yisrael mechuyev la'alas machshav to sheyudi kechob yisrael a yehudi aktol v'ilmali bali then yisoyin. You have to think if I would come to this test, if I would taki be tested in such a way, hayemuchan mezum and limsa nafshel Hashem. That means I would give up my life for Hashem. So on a simpler level, on an easier level of mesiris nefesh, we could think that lu yitzuya. In other words, let's say you're lying in bed and you don't feel like going to daven b'minyan b'tzibur, and you think to yourself, "Lu yitzuya, I would be in some village where there were 9 Jews. Wouldn't I be there every single morning? Wouldn't I be meisa nefesh to? Certainly, I would be. Even on a lower level of mesiris nefesh, you could be mechazik yourself. In your mind, if this is something which you're able to envision in your mind that you're now coming to this nisayin, to this test, you begin to have a tshuka, you begin to want to be a better Jew. Now it would be good for me. Kray yecholti lovel matoris chefzi matoiv manoim ketoiv amiti chenoim ha'elyoin. You're able to say at that time, you're able to come to a madrega, you're able to feel how good and how pleasant it would be if I could leave this world and become part of the Rabbanu Shalom, to become included in godliness. This is what a Jew thinks of when he says Kriyashma. Not some empty intellectual thing that I read Rashi and the Ramban and Radak, and now when I say Kriyashma, I should try to think of this Pshat in Kriyashma, like the Malbim's Pshat in Kriyashma. That's not. That's beautiful, but that's not your kavan of Kriyashma. Because your soul will not be sustained by such a thought of the Pshat in Kriyashma. The same way you could think all day long about having a hamburger, but that's not going to make you feel full. Just by thinking about it, it's not going to make you feel any better. You have to mamish give up your life. In other words, by thinking that thought, but not just a kavana, but by having that thought, your entire being can be filled with this tshuka, with this longing. Kol gufay mispol mikoyach hashloch if it's a nefesh and a guf metaheris, and you and this thought that you have of dying al kiddush Hashem can have the effect of purifying your soul and your body together.